Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Well, we got a great show planned for you today. They're always good. This one may be great. A lot of righteous indignation. First, let me tell you about Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to 10 bucks for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees. So you can trade stocks and keep all your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data, and place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular, things of that nature. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners of Reasonable Doubt free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint. Help you build your portfolio. Sign up at doubt.robinhood.com. And let's get crack-a-lackin'. Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is easy, it's completely legal, and it's the best way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Not sure what you're waiting for? You can be rolling in a matter of moments. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices. Do it today, including your phone and Roku and Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, and anywhere else you stream. And also, don't forget about my channel, Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y, Chassis Channel. Number 501. It is the best. It is Pluto TV.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get it on. Get it on. And welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus. Where are you, Mark?
I was in Utah yesterday. I'm in New York City today, and I'm in Detroit tomorrow.
What's in Detroit for you?
Detroit is the first opening game of the Big Three season, and I couldn't be more excited. So I'm going to go and take a look and watch the Big Three in Detroit and check it all out. It's always the best kickoff of the summer for me personally.
What's going on in the world of legalities?
Hey, And let me tell you what the thing that I love this week. Did you see the, you know who Hope Hicks is, right?
No.
Hope Hicks was a communications person in the White House who's been a, I think she started with Ivanka and then ended up working for President Trump, and then was there for about a year and a half, and then went left, and I think she's with the campaign now, but I'm not so sure. Then was rumored at some point to have been either with Corey Lewandowski or the other guy. Remember the other guy, the chief of staff guy or the deputy chief of staff who had to resign under the domestic violence accusations?
Yeah. Is Hope Hicks the attractive one? Gary says
I was
yes.
going to say that, but I didn't want to.
She's attractive to me. She's young, too. She's about my age.
She's young. She looks like, yeah. How old are you, Gary?
I'm 33. I think she's a year or two younger than me.
Yeah, I was going to say she looks like late 20s, very attractive, reported to Trump was reporter of one time to have made a comment that I won't repeat here because we do not objectify women. She left and she was subpoenaed to talk to Congress and I believe Jerry Nadler's committee. And she and Don McGahn spoke extensively with Robert Mueller. So that's why they want the Nadler's committee in Congress want her to speak. And the big brouhaha the last 2 days has been the fact that she went there. She testified in closed session. She had, I think, six lawyers with her, two from the White House, two private lawyers, two other lawyers for I don't know who they were billing to. But she refused, apparently, to answer 155 questions. And the purported reason was the White House had invoked executive privilege. And so now what's shaping up is that Congress and Nadler's committee specifically is going to sue using that transcript of her refusal to answer the questions in order to show a judge that, look, that it's not a good faith invoking of privilege, executive privilege, and that therefore the judge should compel or order her to answer the questions. What do you think about that, Adam?
Well, it's funny because I was just sort of tuning around the news, and there's so many names now that I can't keep track of post, pre, and past and everything. But they said, all I heard was, there seem to be more questions about her sexuality and her dalliances and her relationships than there were about whatever. And I remember thinking to myself, who are they talking to about, you know, who you were with, so to speak? And
yeah, and right. And there's, you know, you're the father of a daughter. I've got a daughter, Tony, obviously, who's somewhere around Hope Hicks's age. I've got probably two others. I won't name them right now, but they know who they are, who work for me, who are around the same age. And I've come to a realization, and I, you know, you can please push back if you think this is wrong, but there is, and I never believed it, I suppose, because I'm an old white guy, but I have noticed the treatment of her because she's attractive, the treatment, frankly, of Tenney in some situations, and two other women who are about the same age who are also attractive who work for me, by older white guys, always kind of with a pat on the head like, okay, little girl, in a dismissive or patronizing way. And it's astonishing to me how singularly bright these women are. I don't know Hope Hicks, but I do obviously know Tenney. I know the other two that I'm thinking about right now. And I saw it in a situation. The one in particular was not with Tenney, but it was another woman who works for me. And I saw it in a situation involving, scores of financial people in a room with her. And it was almost dismissive in kind of a weird way. And clearly she was head and shoulders brighter than many in the room. But almost because she's attractive and she's young and she's a female, there's a kind of a, I don't know. There's some baggage there that comes, or there's a stereotype, or there's a prism through which people see it that's really kind of astonishing to me. Well, and I had not really seen it until action.
Well, I think as humans, we do this thing, which is we don't have sort of two scores. We don't have this person is young and attractive, so they'll get a 9 for that. And then this person is super bright, super educated, and super intuitive, so they'll get a 9 or a 10 for that. We treat it like a seesaw, which is the higher up the attractive score goes, the lower down the other seat goes. And it's kind of a two-way street. When you see the big fat dude tub of goo come bounding into the office, you go, I bet that guy's good at what he does because he's sweaty and fat. You know, somebody, he must spend a lot of time in the library. Like, that guy was not out surfing and getting laid. That guy was in a law library. So we do a kind of a math where as the attractive number goes up, the good at your job, intelligent number just starts to go down. The reality is there's many occasions when it's both. There's many occasions where one doesn't affect the other. There are occasions where the person is just really good looking and didn't really crack the books because they didn't have to hit it as hard as somebody who had to work. But there's a male version of that too. All the guys I know who are like big studs on campus and captain of the football team, those guys are all just broke, fat, and bald now because they didn't learn how to hit it.
I always slap about that. They kind of peaked too early.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I thought that when I read the transcript, they kept calling her, or at least Hope Hicks, a couple of times, Mrs. Lewandowski, which I thought was a little obnoxious. And if I were the lawyer, I probably would have shut it down at that point. I would have said, look, I know you think that's cute or that's clever, but it's insulting. And by the way, you never do this to a man. So why are you doing it to a young female? It really is patronizing in a way. And when you strictly look at the word patronizing, I mean, what are you going to say? Oh, I heard a rumor you were bing bang bonging Lewandowski, so now I'm going to call you Mrs. Lewandowski, and aren't I clever? I mean, that's juvenile.
Well, insulting. Those hearings, I mean, a few weeks ago when they had Barr up there, and the one guy brought a bucket of fried chicken and stuff, like, they're turning into a sort of a jump the shark kind of moment for this nation that I think when we grew up, or even just a few short years ago, there was a certain decorum and people didn't stoop to certain levels or do certain things. It is game on inside those hearings now. I mean, when you hear like Maisie Hirano like talk about the grifter in chief and stuff like that, like we've really gone way beyond Marquis of Queensberry where we used to be. And if you don't believe me, look no further than Joe Biden, who made an innocuous comment a couple of days ago by basically saying, hey, you know, years ago there were guys I disagreed with. There's a guy who was a segregationist and a guy who was a whatever, and I didn't agree with them, but we still got things done together. We were able to get things done politically.
It's so funny you say that because I saw the cannibalization of him after that comment. And I was just astonished. Did you even hear the words or what he was saying? Or did you just, it was like he was consorting with the enemy and therefore he failed some litmus test. And so therefore we got to kill him today. You know, that's a kill him ideologically, kill him politically. All he said was, he specifically prefaced it with, I don't agree with virtually anything of this guy's worldview. He even called him mean. He said he was a mean-spirited guy, but we still engaged in a civil dialogue, which, by the way, what is wrong with that? I don't understand. What are you supposed to do? You're just supposed to take a baseball bat to somebody's head or assault them? And it ties back to the senator from Hawaii. When I thought that was the most embarrassing display of a questioning or an interrogation. It wasn't an interrogation. It was political theater. And we contrasted it with Kamala Harris. Kamala, whether you agree with her or not, by the way, I would take issue with, you know, the characterization of her as a progressive prosecutor, having dealt with the office, not as DA, but when she was the AG. But you can't take issue with the fact, I don't think, that she is a skilled interrogator or cross-examiner compared to the other thing, which was just, I mean, it was almost like a really, really bad Saturday Night Live skit.
Well, all right, I'm going to tease a couple things. I'll let Gary find, I think, Bernie Sanders' rebuttal to, well, there was, all right, so there was Spartacus, Cory Booker. He was on CNN. So there's Cory Booker's version of what Biden said. Then there's a Bernie Sanders version. There's Elizabeth Warren version. And there's a Kamala Harris version of it. But these are intelligent people. And they're like, well, if you're going to endorse racism, it's like that's not what he said. You know he didn't say it. And when Bernie Sanders said, like, well, you don't endorse racism, and the guy from CNN said, well, that's not what he did. That's not what he described. And Bernie went like, well, I don't know about that. I don't know. It's like, you do know about that, Bernie. You're an intelligent man who has ears. You heard what the man said. Now, I get it. You want him to drop a couple of points, and you'd like to go up a couple of points. But at a certain point, there is something called dignity in your soul. And you should also worry about how many points that drops as well. And you're not appearing to this voter like you're tracking if you really do believe that this is the way you heard it. Also, these same people are the same people who say, hey, you can't just go fire some Tomahawk missiles into Iran. You need to talk to these people. They may be bad guys. You may disagree with Iran, but you need to negotiate and you need to get a deal with those guys. So you do understand the concept of striking a deal with someone you may disagree with fundamentally, yes?
Well, think no farther than how bad Obama was pilloried when he said, I would engage in discussions with people, you know, well, I think at the time he was talking specifically of North Korea and Iran, and was pilloried for that. And now, and people were coming to his defense, this kind of crowd. And now the crowd now saying, what the hell is Joe Biden talking about? To your point, Biden, at least one of the reasons I think that he's got at least more authenticity than the others is people will. I think the last flip flop, so-called, was him on the crime bill. And people would show him on the floor of the Senate back in 94, obviously much younger, talking about super predators and this or that. And look, I couldn't have disagreed with him more. I was kind of in the trenches back then. But I understood what the Democratic Party was doing. The Democratic Party had been kind of marginalized, if you will, when it came to law and order by Republicans. So what do? You get tough on law and order. You start calling people super predators and things of that nature. And you pass a crime bill that led to incarceration, mass incarceration. But at the same time, do I want somebody who says, OK, that didn't work, and acknowledges the fact that, you know, that was then, this is now? By the way, that quote, that was then, this is now, comes straight from a U.S. Supreme Court opinion written by Antoine Scalia, who is a darling of the right. So people evolve. Obviously, Adam, I would suggest that the way you thought when you were 22 or 32 is different than the way you think now. I'll tell you, the way I think now is different than I thought 10 years ago and 20 years ago. And I hope to evolve, and I hope to take in more information, and I hope to say, yeah, I wasn't right then. Or maybe I made, maybe I did something because my political motivations were coloring what my sanity was.
Look at me. I stopped calling everything I don't like gay. Now, yeah. Look, that's evolution. Thank you. I'm a hero. So you can look for, Gary, the response, and you can maybe look for what Biden said. I'll buy you a little time. It's disingenuous. And also, what Biden is saying is, we work for you. And if we are the Hatfields and the McCoys and we get nothing done, then we become the product of a bad divorce. And we're the kids who are left out on our own to fend for ourselves. And what I'm saying is you guys may not like each other. You may get divorced. That's fine. For the sake of the kids, the American people, the children, you guys need to get along so that we can pay the mortgage and have dinner and save for college instead of refuse to do everything all the time and have nothing work. And right. That's and what Biden was pushing.
Right. And it was, you know, it's writ large of kind of something that I've always contrasted the criminal justice system versus civil justice. In the criminal system, generally, prosecutors and defense lawyers understand that you do battle in a courtroom, but can be civil about it in the sense that you can be collegial, you can work, you can have meet and confer, you can try and work out problems. The opposite happens when you're fighting over money in the civil system. When you're fighting over money in the civil system, and I've heard various explanations as to why. One of them is because you may just run into this guy one time because there's so many people practicing civil, whereas criminal tends to be a smaller community. I don't know if I buy that. But there is something about the fact that people act so ridiculous in civil and then, you know, are beyond the pale when it comes to family law, which goes back to your point, fighting over the kids. They get crazy. They do, you know, the craziest things that ever happen in the courthouse are always in the orbit of the family law courts. And so I think all he was saying, in fact, I know all he was saying, he was just making a point. I don't have to agree with this guy. I think he's a mean son of a bitch. And I disagree about virtually everything he had to say, but I could still try to work to get something done, which, after all, is what you're supposed to do, isn't it?
Well, it's always ironic that Biden picked guys who were segregationists, who were racist. He picked them as an example of the worst people. So he's not saying this guy who's a fair to Midland politician who I agree with some other times. The example is I pick someone I disagree with completely and was still able to pass legislation. So the whole point is you do pick somebody who is horrible to illustrate how far away you guys are spiritually and how you're still able to do your job together. It's like saying this guy's a white supremacist, but I was still able to have him as my co-pilot and we were able to land the airplane. And someone goes, you like flying with white supremacists? And of course, I like to say stupid or liar, because everyone that went after him for that heard him, knew what he was saying, and knew exactly what the context was. It wasn't that he was there to embolden white supremacists or to glorify them. They knew exactly what he meant because they're adults and they're college educated. They wanted to spin it their own direction, which is part of the problem. And that's where the news people need to start doing their job. Because if you're just going to have Cory Booker come on to your program and go, I don't need Joe Biden glorifying racism. You, as a news, as a journalist at that point, need to pipe up. And you need to.
Right. That's what's called critical thinking.
Right.
That's what you said. I mean, that's critical thinking, is to say, wait a second here. Wasn't he just saying he could work with someone who he considered to be mean and abhorrent in their beliefs, but he could still get something done? Just ask the question. You don't even need to make it it doesn't have to be your opinion. Just ask a question, engage, and see if you can do it. I mean, that's all it is. Ask simple questions.
All right. I'll let Gary continue his quest for that stuff.
The Biden thing, it appears, did not happen on video. We have I have the transcript here, or I have somebody on CNN reading it. Then we have Booker, Harris, and Bernie.
The response. All right. Also, I'll tease this. Gary, the college that just had to pay Oberlin had to pay $44 million bucks in punitive damages or whatever to the bakery. I've been saying to Mark for a while, when people have said to me, when's this going to end? When are firing programmers from Google because they have an opinion, or shutting down a bakery and calling them racist because a couple of black guys used a fake ID and tried to steal a bottle of wine and shutting them? When it's going to end? When it's going to end is when they start suing everybody. And what? Now everyone's going to think twice, right? Hold on a second. There, Mark. We'll get to that in a second. First, I'll tell you about 8sleep.com. Chronic sleep deprivation leads to depression, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. We need our 8 hours, man. Sleep's a big problem, and temperature is a big problem when it comes to sleep. I have always been a hot sleeper. I've had many a sleepless night where I woke up and just an outline of my body and sweat on the sheets. 8sleep.com. 8sleep has solved that problem. They have the pod by 8sleep. It's high-tech bed designed to achieve your optimal sleep. Developed by sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep, combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. It learns your habits and adjusts the temperature automatically. Think about how many times you wake up because you're hot or you're cold or whatever it is. Now we've eliminated that. Try the pod for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll refund your purchase and arrange a free pickup. What do you got to lose? For a limited time, you get $150 off your purchase. Go to 8eightsleep.com/doubt and check it out. All right, so you have the clip, or you have the transcript. So we'll have. What Biden said.
Yeah, I have a CNN anchor reading.
Oh, sorry.
So we'll
go ahead.
We'll start with that,
and then we'll hear a bunch of people with 2,000 years of college, Rhodes scholars, and prosecutors, and people with advanced degrees, and we'll see how they interpret this statement.
He said, I was in the caucus with James O. Eastland. He never called me boy. He always called me son. Mr. Biden then brought up a deceased Georgia senator, a guy like Herman Talmadge, one of the meanest guys I ever knew. You go down the list of all these guys. Well, guess what? At least there was some civility. We got things done.
All right. So he doesn't like these guys, but they got things done. There was some civility. By the way, it's funny when people are like, they're in his party. These are Democrat. These are Democrat racists, by the way, that people seem to forget about. All right, so let's see how, I don't know, let's see how Cory Booker interprets this whole thing.
I was raised to speak truth to power.
Oh, boy.
And that I will never apologize for doing that. And Vice President Biden shouldn't need this lesson. And at a time when we have, from the highest offices in the land, divisiveness, racial hatred, and bigotry being spewed. He should have the sensitivity to know that this is a time I need to be an ally. I need to be a healer. I need to not engage in usage of words that will harm folks. For his posture to be to me, I've done nothing wrong. You should apologize. I'm not a racist. Is so insulting and so missing the larger point that he should not have to have explained to him that this should not be a lesson that someone who's running for president of the United States should have to be given.
Sorry. But who's interviewing him? Really? You can't just go.
Wait,
first off, douche, it's divisive. I don't know what he's talking about. Nobody knows what he's talking about.
That was like a bromide festival. What in the heck? How does speaking truth to power and divisive. How did he pronounce it?
He's a fucking blowhard. Anyone who says divisive instead of divisive, I can't hang with. He's taught to speak truth to power. I don't even know what the fuck that blowhard's talking about. Didn't he play football at Stanford? Jesus goddamn Christ. God, has he turned into a pussy?
I don't even understand.
All right,
that.
So that's his take. Joe owes him an apology.
Right.
Because of the times we're living in. It's exactly because of the times we're living in that he's using that as an example. But we'll hear what Bernie had to say. Here's Bernie. Now, look, to be fair, the news anchor says rightfully to Bernie, I don't think that's what he meant from MSNBC, but here we go.
You have joined Cory Booker in the last 24 hours, calling on Joe Biden to apologize for comments he made about working with segregationists. And it's the more people hear about it, some are saying, well, he was applauding or celebrating that. That wasn't.
Mark, I'm
Hold
sorry.
On a second.
Mark, you may not be able to hear because we have to play it off the same computer as you're Skyping in on.
Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. So I'll tell you what Bernie says, but we'll play it for the audience.
What Joe Biden was doing. Joe Biden was trying to make the point that bipartisanship is necessary. He's done so working with the deplorable of the deplorables. That's why he gave the example of the segregationists. So why is it that you believe he has to apologize?
Look, I mean, I think the media makes a bigger deal of it than it is.
So he doesn't have
All
to
that
apologize?
I said, no, yeah, I do. I do. Because it's one thing. Look, when you're in Congress, you work with everybody. I do. I think every member of the Senate, every member of the House works. People who have very, very different points of view. But I don't think you have to be touting personal relations with people who were very brutal segregationists.
But, Senator,
a massive amount of,
he wasn't touting
that's
relations.
My view on it.
His point
I'm
was.
Sorry. Okay, ma'am, I'm sorry. If you disagree with me, that's fine. That's my view.
But haven't you, over a four-decade career, had to align yourselves with people who don't share your views on things in
absolutely.
Order to advance your causes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just what I said. Absolutely. I have, and so has every other member of the Congress. But one doesn't really tout, you know, one's personal relationships or make a virtue out of civility when it may be a necessity and not a virtue.
Understood. Senator, thank you for joining us.
So that wasn't the clip I was looking for. I don't know who he was talking to. Bernie must have been talking to somebody else. But anyway, Bernie's turning into an old blowhard because he's just like, look, he's not touting racism. He's saying he has to work with people and get a job done. And Bernie's like, that's my opinion. That's your opinion. That's my opinion. Bernie, let me say this about...
Good, that's a pretty good imitation. You. Can you do that again?
I just have... It's not Bernie. I just said it for old Jew. But here, Bernie used to have an authenticity. And Bernie's authenticity, if you caught old Bernie was like, enough about the emails already. I don't care about Hillary's emails. I want to move on with the debate. That was old Bernie. New Bernie is, I know Biden didn't do anything, but I'm jumping on the bandwagon because a black guy did, and I want to be seen in a certain light. That's what new Bernie. That's what new Bernie said.
And you know what? I think people get that intuitively. I get the. It's no different. I always look at everything, obviously, through the prism of a trial. If a juror sense that you are, you know, kind of trying to manipulate them, you're dead to them immediately. And that's the same way it should be with politicians.
Yeah, Bernie is going to run the danger of losing his brand in that his whole thing was like, he was like a cool, like there's a reason why In-N-Out Burger isn't in New Jersey. They're like, we're SoCal. We do what we do. We don't serve burritos or soft tacos. We're on brand. In other words, like they just have a brand. And Bernie had a brand, but Bernie's in danger of sort of franchising here because the old Bernie was very Bernie through and through. Agree or disagree, that's what he did. The new Bernie is starting to jump on and take the bait that a lot of these other guys do. Everybody knows what Joe Biden said was not only not racist, but accurate and necessary. But Cory Booker jumped on it, and then all the rest lined up behind Cory Booker. Not because they thought Joe Biden said anything wrong, but because there was a train that was leaving. It's a, hey, the racist train is leaving the station, and you need to jump on it.
Right. And you know what's particularly disturbing is Biden specifically set the table with, this guy was a racist. This is, you know, he was upfront with it. And there's something that's just intellectually bankrupt about the idea of trying to hijack that and invert it and just act like you're, you know, somehow you're holier than thou. In terms of, oh, you know, there's an ideological purity and you've crossed the DMZ line or the red line in the sand of ideological purity. It's bullshit.
There's one of Bernie. I don't know who he was talking to, but it wasn't that one, Gary, but I'll tease it. But there's also Kamala Harris doing a good one, too, Gary, if you may have, or I don't know if you have that one queued up. She's just, but again, it's just more twisting of words and misinterpreting. And again, I never think it's honest because these are people who are highly educated. You cannot be highly educated if that was a professor lecturing and you walked out of the lecture. So here's a hypothetical for you. You got Cory Booker, you got Kamala Harris. These are Rhodes Scholar, Stanford, you know, law degrees, Bernie Sanders, and I think the other one may have been, Elizabeth Warren. If highly educated, Harvard, Stanford, everything, right? Okay. They're all sitting, just the four of them are sitting in a lecture hall. And Joe Biden is the professor. And Joe Biden is lecturing these scholarly students, these high, you know, 500 years of education between the four of them. And Joe Biden is there is no one's running for anything. There's no political office. There's no anything. Joe Biden is just a professor. And Joe Biden says, you know, I'm a professor at this college. And there are other professors that were here years ago. And some of them were racist. And I didn't like them. And I didn't like them as human beings, and I didn't like their ideology. But you know what? I worked with some of those professors in order to get the new library built so that all the students could use it. Thank you. That's my lesson for today. And he left the room. Do you think those four students, if somebody came to them and said, what did you learn? What do you think the message was from the professor? Do you think they would all go, oh, I wrote down he's a racist and that he says that racism is good? Do you think they would come across with that? Do you think that would be what they would surmise from this lecture? Fuck no, they wouldn't. They'd all go, well, what he's saying is that they're people you don't agree with, but it's still good to get something done with those people that you don't like for the greater good. That's what every single one of them would have written down.
Absolutely. That's why I want to hear what Elizabeth Warren said. What did Elizabeth Warren say?
We'll have Kamala and we'll see if we can find Elizabeth Warren as well. First, I'll tell you about teencounseling.com. You can connect your 13 to 19-year-old with a licensed professional counselor where they spend their time, and that is on the smartphone, people. Start with a short questionnaire to help them understand your teen and their needs. Then you're matched with an available therapist to start communicating within 24 hours. You can review their credentials, directly communicate with the counselor, and make sure it's a good fit. It's easy and free to change the counselor if needed. More affordable than traditional counseling, and financial aid is available. Look, people, man, everyone's out there worried about their health and what they're eating and exercise. You better worry about that young teen's mind. They are exposed to a lot, and it's the new world order. So you can visit teencounseling.com/doubt. Help your teen take charge of their mental health. Reasonable Doubt listeners get 10% off the first month at teencounseling.com/doubt. Gary, do you have Kamala? We'll listen to her. Again, picture all these people with advanced degrees in a study hall listening to Professor Biden speak and see if they would have come away with this outcome. Here we go.
But to coddle the reputations of segregationists, of people who, if they had their way, I would literally not be standing here as a member of the United States Senate, is, I think, it's misinformed and it's wrong.
Should Joe Biden apologize
for that?
He's going to have to make that decision. But, you know, let's be very clear that the senators that he is speaking of with such adoration are individuals who made and built their reputation on segregation. The Ku Klux Klan celebrated the election of one of them. So this is a very serious matter.
It's a very serious matter. Did he speak with them with adoration?
Did he coddle them? I guess. Oh, so he coddled them. I always think of coddling as kind of like swaddling and embracing. I guess if you want to say that civility means you embrace, I mean, and then I guess if a prosecutor does something that I don't like, I can't even speak civilly with them anymore. I guess that's the lesson I've learned.
Well, there's intellectual dishonesty here. That's the bottom line. These are very intelligent people who are in the business of processing information. If you're a prosecutor, you got process right in your title, bitch. You process information. If this is your takeaway, then you're lying, because we know you're not from the Ozarks. None of these people are from Harvard and Yale.
The interesting thing is, when Kamala was the Attorney General of California, she would get routinely, the Ninth Circuit especially, would reverse and call out that Attorney General's office, the California Attorney General's office, for prosecutorial misconduct, for failure to disclose Brady-type materials, things like that. So that obviously is not a very civil interaction in terms of the courts calling them out. So do you then, I'm just trying to think, did you, as a prosecutor, or if you're the defense lawyer for some guy who's had evidence hid by the prosecution and the Court of Appeals has just said, has excoriated the prosecutor, do you then not speak to that prosecutor's office? Do you not speak to them and just tell them, I'm not coddling you, look what you did. I'm not going to be civil with you. I refuse to deal with you. There is no logic to this. And it's a complete dissembling of what the actual words were.
Well, look, we have the last one. We have Elizabeth Warren. There's a logic.
I want to hear Elizabeth Warren, because this is a professor. This is somebody who has been who is highly regarded in academia. She comes with the greatest credentials in academia. So I want to hear what she has to say about this.
Gary has the transcript.
She provided a quote to the Washington Post and said, I'm not here to criticize other Democrats, but it's never okay to celebrate segregationists. Never.
Celebrate. So Biden wanted.
Celebrate.
By the way, also, there's a kind of a math here, which is, if, in fact, Biden speaks to his campaign manager on Tuesday morning and the campaign manager says, what are we going to do today, Joe? And Joe says, celebrate racists.
Did Joe? I missed the part. Did Vice President Biden say, I'd like to eliminate MLK Day and substitute it with Talmadge Day? Is that what he was saying? Because I missed that part of it.
He's celebrating segregationists. And
I thought he was, what he was saying is, correct me if I'm wrong, he wasn't celebrating the person. He was talking about the process and talking about civility.
Of course. Look,
so where did we take this right turn or left turn?
I will tell you this. The problem, and it's the problem with all the news outlets. The problem is this. When you say to somebody, you're wired this way, I'm wired this way. If I'm interviewing Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders is explaining it's never okay to celebrate racists, I will say that's not what Joe Biden was saying, and you know it. And he says, oh, we'll agree to disagree. I'm not nearly done with this conversation. I'm not done until he fucking taps out or admits he's lying. I'm not done. I'm not done with him like I wasn't done with Gavin Newsom when he was talking about check cashing places or any other bullshit. That guy was spewing out on this show. I'm not done. I got unlimited laugh for you. And this thing where the journalist asks one chicken shit follow-up question and then we just move on, that's not journalism.
Did you hear when Gary played it? What I heard was a gaggle of, I assume that was reporters, screaming, nope. Should he apologize? Should he apologize? Right. I know. How about what should he apologize for? How about that question? What did he say that you disagree with?
Not doing it anymore. And again, not journalism. So there was the case of the bakery that we were sort of talking about. I think it was $44 million.
Love this. Yeah. Right. Gary, can you do you want to set this up or you want me to do it? I think
To the best of my understanding, there's a bakery near Oberlin College that the surrounding residents and the school frequented and used often. And a gentleman went into the bakery and was...
I think it was three gentlemen for some reason.
Correct. Right. But then there was
three gentlemen.
Correct. And one of them was seen to be shoplifting something, and the store owner chased him down outside of the shop, eventually got into a scuffle with him, and was declared racist for the fact that the gentleman in question was black.
I think when the cops showed up, the guy he was scuffling with was beating on him.
Yes, by the end of it, the shop owner took quite a bit of punishment.
Mind you, these guys get prosecuted. Then there's an issue. You'll go through all of the prosecution. They were literally prosecuted for, and I know the guys hate it when...
Mark, your phone, the Skype.
We may have lost him on Skype. We'll fire him back up
Fire him back up. So, guy shoplifts from store. Owner of store runs out. Grabs the guy who shoplifts. Shoplifter is beating on the guy who owns the store when the cops show up.
Yeah, and then there's a contract. The Oberlin has a contract, I think, for food service as well with the bakery. They would supply baked goods. So there was a prosecution that was happening. Protests started. What the trial displayed was an amazing tone deaf defense to this. And the chancellor, president, whoever was in charge, was sending emails that were even more obnoxious. And what this reminds me so much of Aaron. Remember Aaron Andrews when the we talked about that case where there was a certain point in the Aaron Andrews case where a waitress was waiting on the people during the trial, and they were making comments about her, passing around the picture, or making comments about her body. And you and I discussed that's kind of when it flips the switch and you just piss off the jurors. That was the same thing here. They showed some of the text. They showed some of the defense lawyers played right into that kind of tone deaf, what do these guys think thing when you've got three generations of this bakery that are the fabric of the community. It was obvious that nobody was going to be the adult in the room at Oberlin College, and they got spanked. Now, it was not going to stand at $44 million because there's a prohibition on punitive damages that are more than two times. But it's exactly what you and I talk about, that the only way, whether it was Hulk Hogan, whether it was Aaron Andrews, whether it was a case I tried 7 years ago with a insurance company that didn't want to pay a $24,000 property damage claim to a veteran, and the jury ended up spanking him for $8 million. It's what it ends up having. It's the only result that can get somebody's attention.
Well, people are going to get their attention now because Oberlin, based on I don't know what, again, the faculty and the administration are done being the moms and the dads and the parents. They've just taken a back seat. We've seen it a million times. We've seen it at Evergreen College and many other places. They're scared of their clientele, who are a bunch of pissed off 19-year-old babies, and they're going to go out and protest and get bullhorns and signs and go in front of a store for the crime of chasing a guy down who stole a bottle of booze?
Exactly. But by the way, there was also an element to this, I believe, that was in evidence, where they told the store, if you promise to just not prosecute or not or have arrested people who are shoplifting, then maybe we will stop this. So basically, you're supposed to just let people steal from you in order to continue your contract. There was some element that was introduced into the trial or into evidence that was just somewhat astonishing when you're in front of a jury saying, OK, we can just continue to pick your pocket if you want to stay in business. Otherwise, we're going to brand you as a racist. And that's, you know, I don't even understand. I'd love to talk. I wish we had one of the defense lawyers, because I'd love to ask him, what was your strategy for taking that position and kind of doubling, tripling, quadrupling down that it's OK to destroy a business that's been there for three generations who was just trying to maintain some decorum or sense of order?
Well, also, look, the kids are kids. They're 19. They're spoiled. They're pampered. They have a sense of entitlement. That's fine. As far as the dean and the faculty and the administration, it's their job to say, no, we're not going to cut our contracts off with this company because this company did nothing. Somebody stole a bottle of booze and the guy chased him down and tried to get their property, which was stolen from them, back. That's not grounds for tearing up a contract that we have with this company. And you can bellyache all you want about it, and you can march, and you can protest, you can do whatever you want, but that doesn't mean we have to bend to your whims simply because there's a group of you who are misinformed.
Yeah. And you know what it would take? It would take about 60 seconds of somebody explaining that to a 19-year-old and say, throw a fit. It's like a little kid. When you raise kids, you know, I always wondered why doesn't somebody step in when they're throwing a fit and just say, you can scream all you want. I don't care. This is how it's going to be. And just ignore them. Guess what happens? Then they don't do it again. But if you indulge a little kid every time he's going, Jake, I'm sorry. Here you go. Here's I'm going to buy you a toy because you threw a fit. I mean, it's basic human nature.
That takes 60 seconds, but what else takes 60?
True car, 60 seconds. It's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else? You can do in about a minute. You can get an offer for your car with True Car. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, Adam's voice, Gary's voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone, from your house. Just go to True Car. I love this part of this. Simply enter in your license plate number and watch your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and boom, you'll get an accurate True Cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, bring your car in. They'll check it out with you together. You go over it with them. You can ask questions. You get answers you need. There's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade it in for the car, your car, for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today.
All right, Mark, I know you're on the fly, jet setting all over this man's country. When are you going to be back in L.A.?
I hope to be in the studio next week with you if you're not on the road.
I will be here with bells on waiting for you. You may check out my stand-up. I'm coming to Portland in July 19th and 20th. You go to amcroll.com for all the live shows and not Taco Bell material. You can check out Chassis and see all our movies we have over there as well. Mark, what do you got?
I got Capri in the Hamptons, open this weekend. It's going to be beautiful weather. Should stop by, see the pop-up, Brooklyn Chop House. You got Prova in Times Square. I just ate there today. And in Grand Central Terminal, Engine Company 28, downtown LAX, to Mediterranean Tapas at 10E. And if you want to sweat it out a little bit, V Palm Springs. Or if you want a little ocean action, get over to Casa Tropicana in San Clemente.
And check out 22 Hours, An American Nightmare on Podcast One. Until next time, Sam Kroll for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.